From Flourish DX, this is the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. With workplace mental health becoming a safety prerogative, this is the source of information on psychological injury prevention and health promotion.
Hi, and welcome to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. My name is Jason Denshee, and I'm one of the hosts of the show. The aim of the podcast is to rapidly increase the knowledge and application of psychological health and safety in workplaces worldwide. To help with this, we have regular guests from around the world who are leading the way in this important area. But before I introduce our guest and topic for today, allow me to introduce my co-host, Joel Mitchell. How are they, Joel?
I'm feeling a little bit harassed this morning, Jason. It was just a difficult morning to get out of the house.
Yeah, so harassed, we should just clarify for our listeners.
You're not harassed by my colleagues. Yeah. Harassed by my my 9-year-old who didn't want to get out of bed and get ready.
Yeah.
And go to school.
Yeah, I actually had a similar issue with my 7-year-old this morning. So I even put a timer on because it's getting a bit ridiculous getting them ready for the school in the morning. And so you've got 7 minutes, which I thought was actually quite a lot of time. But in the end, she ended up in her knickers eating her breakfast because she still wasn't dressed after 7 minutes.
Yeah. It's almost like children don't have a good concept of time.
Or urgency.
Yeah. They don't care.
No, they don't.
No.
What a life.
I know.
Carefree. Time, it's like subjective.
It just doesn't exist when you're a kid. What a magnificent time to be alive.
Yeah. But I am conscious of time today because we have actually kept our guests waiting. We both needed some caffeine to get us going this morning.
We did.
So
let's get into it.
We probably should. So I'd like to introduce our guest for today. Before joining academia, she was a quantity surveyor in the construction industry. She is the then coordinator of construction safety and wellbeing of the Cooperative Research Centre and senior lecturer and DECRA research fellow at the School of Architecture and Built Environment, Queensland University of Technology.
Well done.
I really should have read this before.
Probably.
Yeah, okay.
Give it a dry run. Yeah.
Yes. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Carol Hong.
Thank you for having me.
No, great to have you on. This episode all originated from a LinkedIn post where your research was shared by one of our network, and I thought it was really interesting. So really stoked that you could join us today, Carol, and unpack that a bit more.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my research with a wider audience. I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, hopefully the podcast gets more downloads than the journal gets downloaded. Well, actually, I shouldn't say I hope that. I'm hoping that this is a broader way to disseminate the information than typically is seen from journals.
Maybe let's say it's a different audience.
Look, I need my caffeine to kick in, Joelle. You can take it from here.
Oh, I also need, more caffeine for me.
Carol, you're going to need to carry us today, I'm afraid.
All right, Carol, let's start with our easy questions. What podcasts do you like to listen to?
I mainly spend my time listening to podcasts relating to my work and my research interests, so mainly related to mental health and the construction industry. I did talk to Jason that I watched a few episodes of your podcast, very interesting, and I find it very relevant to me. And I also would listen to Construction Technology, the Digital Transformation, which is about building information modeling and how the construction industry is transforming.
Fascinating. That's definitely not one we've heard before.
It sounds like even more niche than what we do.
I know. who would have thought that was possible?
Yeah, we'll have to find out who they are and we can compare stats.
Yeah.
Yeah, Google it. Yeah, the digital transition.
No, we like a really nerdy podcast, don't we?
From time to time, yeah.
Yeah.
Although the one that we're listening to at the moment is The Rewatcher.
It is, yeah. I mean, that's nerdy in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if you've come across it, Carol. I reckon you're probably a similar vintage to us. So Joelle and I are both teenagers in the 90s. So Buffy the Vampire Slayer was kind of much like must-watch TV back then. And they've just brought out something called The Rewatcher, and Joelle put me onto it, and I'm loving it. And I hate that I have to wait back like in the 90s. Very, very nostalgic.
Nostalgic? Just,
caffeine, come on.
You're doing great.
No. But, that you have to wait a week to hear the next episode.
Yep.
So, if you were a Buffy fan or an Angel fan or whatever, it's definitely worth a listen.
Yep. And if you haven't watched Buffy, then do what they're doing, watch an episode, listen to them talk about it on the podcast, and then wait a week before you watch the next episode, just like it was in the 90s.
Yeah, no binging.
No binging. So one of them is old, like she's our age, and she is watching it again as an adult. And then the other one, I thought it was her sister, but now I think it might be her niece.
It's her niece.
Yeah, who was like a child and hasn't seen it before. So there's one of them watching it again, and then there's the other one who's watching it for the first time. So that's kind of the dynamic, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, Carol, can you tell us about your professional career, please?
Thank you. Well, I'm an academic in Queensland University of Technology, and I'm passionate about improving construction health and safety. So I've been doing research in this area for around 14 years now, and my recent research has been on mental health in the construction industry. So I got a research project funded by the Australian Research Council in 2019, and I worked with a team of colleagues from School of Management and School of Psychology from the University of Queensland to look at how we can improve mental health in the construction industry.
Yeah, and it's a really important area, because we know that suicides in construction workers is quite a bit higher than the rest of the population. So it is, from that perspective, a fairly at-risk group. And I think, it's definitely an area that needs more work and more research being done in that. So it's fantastic that you're taking on that that challenge and that opportunity to really understand what's happening there and drive some improvement.
Yeah, the statistics are really shocking. So what came to my attention was back in 2017, one of my students working in the construction industry, he told me his workmate killed himself. So I was shocked. It was so close to people around me. And then I think around 2018, some statistics came out, and construction workers are 6 times more likely to die by suicide than by workplace accidents in a construction site. And the latest statistics also show that male construction workers were 97% higher to have suicide than non-construction workers.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, and you can understand why there's groups like Movember, for example, that have specific focus on men's mental health in those sorts of industries.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Carol, I was saying from the outset that, you know, what brought your research to my attention was it being shared on LinkedIn. As listeners would be aware, Joel and I spend way too much time on LinkedIn. It's probably, if I was to look, and I'm not going to, I really would be scared to look at my phone usage. What is it? The screen time? Yeah, but LinkedIn, I'd say, is my number one app, and then probably mail. But the article that you wrote was called The Relationship Between Psychosocial Hazards and Mental Health in the Construction Industry, a Meta-Analysis. So actually for our listeners that are, you know, not from, an academic background, can you maybe first of all explain what a meta-analysis is?
Yeah. So meta-analysis allows you to look at the pooled correlation coefficient. So for the same topic out there, there may be 10 articles or 20 articles conducted all over the world. And meta-analysis allows us to look at the overall picture, what is the quantitative effect size of different variables. So instead of conducting one study in one location, which the sample size may be 100, we can collect a bunch of existing research and have a bigger sample size, have a bigger data set to look at the overall effect size on different population.
Yeah. And so when you looked to find journal articles that met your inclusion criteria, how many were included in your meta-analysis?
48.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was the total sample size then of that?
Over 10,000.
Yeah, so much, like you say, much more representative than one single study which might have looked at a smaller sample. So we talked about some of the issues involved in mental health and the higher prevalence of mental illness and suicide in the construction industry versus other industries. You know, that's obviously one motivation to research in this area. What else prompted you to do this meta-analysis?
We really interested to know what is the effect of psychosocial hazards on mental health. So there are ubiquitous studies talking about one particular psychosocial hazards on particular mental health outcome, like burnout. But really, there's no quantitative research telling us how big is the impact of these groups of psychosocial hazards on different mental health outcomes. While there are some systematic literature review papers listing out these are the important psychosocial hazards, there is no quantification of how big is the effect. So that motivates us to conduct such a meta-analysis to see, how big is the impact of psychosocial hazards on mental health.
Yeah, and I think some people are still baffled by that. I mean, the research around psychosocial hazards and its effects on mental health has been around for decades, but there's still a lot that we don't know, right? Or we can't be sure about. So there's still so much work that needs to be done in this area.
Yeah, and especially in construction industry, the papers we reviewed, most of them, they were not conducted by psychologists, but construction management researchers like me. And the concept of psychosocial hazards is actually very new to us. And most of us do not have a psychology background. And when we did the analysis, the meta-analysis, we find that some of the concepts might need better clarification and better definition, a consistent definition in our field.
Yeah, I think that's across the board with anyone who's talking about psychosocial. I mean, even Jewel and I were talking to a colleague just the other day about the conflation between terms like psychosocial hazard or psychosocial risk factor or workplace factor. You know, they largely are the same thing.
Well, yeah,
no special input from Joel except
I'm affirming what you're saying, Jason. Yeah.
That's unusual. That's probably why I'm a bit baffled.
You're shocked, yeah.
I had a good discussion about this with my colleague Kirsten Wei, and I think she's really the expert to tell you the difference between psychosocial hazards and psychosocial risk.
I think we still need to have those conversations. It is a good thing that we're now seeing things like ISO 45003, which is an agreed international framework on psychological health and safety and does clarify definitions. And in Australia, we've got the model regs and the model code of practice, which also then, provides some clear definitions. Problem is each state in Australia kind of likes to change it up a little bit as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Harmonise, schmarmonise.
Yeah, that's about right. So, Carol, I'm interested to know what you found then. What are the key psychosocial hazards in the construction industry that have a negative impact on worker wellbeing?
So we find the overall effect size being 0.28. So we include 14 psychosocial hazards in the meta-analysis and the overall being 0.28. And we also identified
Carol, maybe just unpack that number. So what does that 0.28 actually mean?
Yeah. So it means when you increase that, so it's about the correlation. It's how strong is the relationship between psychosocial hazards and the change in mental health.
Yeah, and so 0.3 from my stats memory is a moderate correlation.
Only moderate, yes. So that means there are actually many, many other factors that would affect mental health other than psychosocial hazards.
Yeah, and that was the cumulative of all 14 psychosocial hazards?
Yes.
That was the correlation? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So if we break it down for individual psychosocial hazard, the strongest one being role conflict, is 0.41.
Yeah. Okay. So strongest. Higher than the average 0.41.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now that was the bit that really made your research of interest to me, because generally when we think about the psychosocial hazards that have the biggest impact on employee mental health, we automatically think work overload, occupational violence, bullying and harassment. But in this research, you found it was actually role conflict that had the biggest impact. So for our listeners, how did you define role conflict?
So you have different role that they are of competing interests, and you can't do them at the same time.
Yeah. So it was that came out as the number one. And I remember, in the commentary, there was someone that said, oh, any expert would be able to tell you that. And like, really? No, everyone would be defaulting to work overload would probably be the biggest one beyond the bullying and occupational violence ones.
Mm. Yeah. In fact, that's what we find from our interview. We interviewed 33 construction workers and site-based supervisors. And from our interviews, every interviewee talk about role overload. That's definitely the number one most frequently mentioned.
Yeah.
But when it came down to statistical significance or the quantitative impact, role conflict is the number one.
Yeah, and that's something that definitely is something we've been standing on our soapbox for a while talking about. There is a difference between the presence of a psychosocial hazard and a risk to employee mental health based on the impact that it has.
Yeah.
And often people select into industries or roles where there are known psychosocial hazards. I mean, if you think about lawyers, if they were afraid of hard work and long hours, we wouldn't have a legal profession because that really is typical of the industry. But just because there is a psychosocial hazard present doesn't necessarily mean that that is the highest risk. It is really, looking at what is having an impact on wellbeing, which is different.
Mm. Yeah. That's exactly what we think. Our team compare the results from what we find from the meta-analysis and what we find from the interview. We think the difference between the importance or how frequently being mentioned of role overload versus role conflict being you work in the industry, construction, and you accept it is role overload, that's the norm. That's your daily job. You mention it, but it doesn't really affect too much of your mental health well-being.
Yeah, that's right. So, I think that's fascinating and really reaffirming that we're not crazy, Joelle, in terms of our assertions.
Not about that anyway.
No, we're crazy in other ways.
Plenty of other ways, but not that. So, Carol, you mentioned your interview research, so I'd like to explore that a little bit more. So this was an Australian Research Council-funded DECRA project.
Yeah.
So you interviewed 33 construction workers and site supervisors, and this was about their perceptions of workplace psychosocial hazards and mental health. So can you give us an overview of what you found through those interviews?
Yeah, right. So there are two parts in the interview. First of all, I want to ask the interviewees, how do they feel about mental health? How can they describe mental health? What does mental health mean to them? So we came up with different themes, and the first theme being they feel comfortable and safe. So safety is an important element in mental health. And the second theme being people's mind, a way of thinking. So it's kind of a processing, it's a thinking process. And the third theme we find is positive mood or emotions. So these are the three common themes our interviewees talk about their mental health. What does mental health mean to them? And we also find that so construction workers and site supervisors, and some of them, they received some mental health first aid training, and some of them sit in the health and safety committee. We find those interviewees, they can articulate better or articulate more how do they feel about mental health, or what does mental health mean to them. But without this kind of background, some interviewees struggle to articulate what mental health means to them.
Yeah, okay. But so you're saying that there is that a relationship between them feeling like their environment is physically safe for them, and that actually has an impact on their mental health.
Yes, yes. Because it's a risky job, yeah.
Yeah, that's and I think that's also an important finding, because that I think that aspect of psych health and safety a lot of the time is overlooked. That the importance of having a safe physical environment does actually also impact your mental health quite significantly.
Yeah. So the second part of my interview was on the perception of psychosocial hazards. So how do they feel about their work environment, and what are the psychosocial hazards that they encounter on a daily basis? And we identified 18 psychosocial hazards, and we classified them according to the job demand and job resources model. And we identified 6 unique, or that's more related to the characteristics of the construction industry. And these are the safety concerns, really, because they're working in a dangerous environment, their tasks are high risk, and exposure to traumatic events. So when they witness some fatal accidents or injuries, that they got that traumatic experience, that also affect their mental health, and task interdependency. Some trades can't come in until the other trades has finished. Mm. So really, that led to lack of job control. And then the contract pressure and, will overload all this, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, I can see how they are quite unique to the construction industry, or I guess other...
It's just at a different level of scale, yes. It's just magnified a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And so what were the... What were the main findings then out of that, or those two findings? What were your conclusions?
Yeah. We find the most interesting conclusion from these interviews, we identified the interrelationships among these psychosocial hazards. So psychosocial hazards, they do not just stand alone by itself. They are all interrelated. And there would be cascading effect if one happens, and it would trigger the other psychosocial hazards as well. I think that's something, it emerged by itself. We didn't mean to find this, but it came out from the interviews, and that also comes as the foundation of our next step to develop a quantitative mathematical model, which we realized, okay, these psychosocial hazards, they are so interrelated. Some of them are actually related in a two-way direction. One would lead to the other would lead to the first one as well. So that really affect our choice, what's the next for our research. So what's the modeling or statistical analysis that can shoot this scenario?
Yeah.
That has really significant implications, I think, to how psychosocial risk assessment is done within organisations at the moment. And I think I've been saying this for a while, but again, it's nice to have some research to back up what I've been saying, is that I guess the normal approach that organisations might take in doing a physical hazard risk assessment, in putting a line item on a risk matrix and assessing likelihood and consequence, applying controls to that single hazard, that's not really going to work for psychosocial hazards because of that interaction that's going on there. So that type of a model of using that normal risk matrix in the way that it's traditionally being used isn't appropriate for psychosocial hazard risk assessment.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
Excellent.
I'm glad you jumped on that, because I was like, whoa, Carol, this is amazing. This is exactly what people need to hear.
Yeah, so that's a fantastic finding, and we'll be very, very interested to see the results of the next iteration of your research around that that modelling.
The other thing that I find really interesting about that is then when you look to control hazards, right?
Yeah.
So often, as you're saying, like when you're looking at physical hazards, but this is how people are looking at psychosocial hazards. They'll look at all of them independently and go, okay, work overload's a concern, role ambiguity's a concern, job insecurity, whatever, right? They're all concerns. What's our control for each of these? Mm. Without going, well, actually, let's fully understand the interrelation. We can go, well, you know, if we're waiting for another trade, you know, this has all these flow-on effects and creates all these other psychosocial hazards. And so really, if we address that one, we actually will be addressing all these other psychosocial hazards as well, or like mitigating them. And so that's, again, like, you know, basic risk management, right? You know, one control can actually address a number of psychosocial hazards.
Yep.
Yeah. But looking at what's most important, or what's the beginning of that chain reaction, like you say, with psychosocial hazards, how can we get to that top one? Because then we're going to have a lot less issues with all these other psychosocial hazards.
Yeah.
So in terms of priority, it's not just what is the biggest risk, but what is kicking off this chain reaction as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. So interesting, Carol. I'm so glad we've got you on. So for the maths nerds, Carol, you've been creating, you've alluded to this mathematical model.
Yeah.
For the impacts of psychosocial hazards on the mental health of site-based construction practitioners. So can you tell us a bit more about this?
Yeah. It's the following step from our interview, and because we find that these psychosocial hazards, they actually interact with each other, that means the traditional classical statistical models would not be the best option, because traditional classical statistical models require these variables to be quite independent, and it can't cater for nonlinear relationship. So with after careful consideration, we've chosen Bayesian network analysis to build our Bayesian network model, which allow us to consider complex interdependencies among variables and nonlinear relationship. And sample size would not be a problem because you can structure your model and you can put data to train the model, and it is looking at the probability instead of the traditional statistical analysis. So we developed the model based on a survey. So we conduct a survey. We collect data from 186 construction workers and site supervisors, and we put 11 psychosocial hazards into the model, and we provide the model with a predetermined structure based on a focus group. So after the interview, we had a group of experts from the construction industry to tell us from the 18 psychosocial hazards we identified from the interview, we narrowed down to 11 and come up with the direction, which one is related to the other. And we put it in the model, and we train the model using the survey data, and we identified that poor physical environment, contract pressure, and lack of co-worker support being the root north in the model. So these are the fundamental trigger points for the other psychosocial hazards.
Yeah. What were they again, Carol, for our listeners? Because that's very important. So what were the root causes?
Poor physical environment, contract pressure, and lack of co-worker support.
Mm.
Yeah. That contract pressure was an interesting one, because Chris Doyle actually mentioned that when we spoke to him.
He did, yeah, and he was really talking about actually, well, we need to, when we're submitting a tender, we actually need to plan for those sorts of issues, and actually, you know, what are the problems that we know are going to emerge? What are the, you know, what are the hiccups that just always happen in these types of projects? And we actually need to build in sort of time and buffering, I guess, for those things.
Yeah, and it also speaks to the importance of protecting your supply chain if you are the procurer of these services as well. And because often it's like whoever is putting in the lowest cost when it comes to construction, they're the ones that win the bid. But then they don't necessarily have the same protections for, you know, contract pressures and that sort of thing. So, yeah. You know, if we want sustainable supply chains, then, you know, the people procuring it need to not just be going for the lowest bid, but look at the realities of this.
Yeah, and that really comes into, you know, where there are those shared duties between parties under mm-hmm. the Act and how, yeah, as a client organisation, you're actually addressing that in collaboration with your suppliers as well to meet those duties.
Yeah, because the physical working environment, right, that would already be largely looked at, or at least the risk management approach or the mm-hmm. occupational health and safety management system that a company in your supply chain has, that would be evaluated. Mm-hmm. But are they looking at the pressure they're putting on their supply chain through the contract negotiation, or, you know, however their contract has been negotiated and set up?
Yeah, and so how are you evaluating that through your tender process?
Yeah.
Mm.
No, Carol, this is fascinating. This is actually, like, we've had a lot of great guests on, but this is a really fascinating conversation.
This is, yeah.
Well, maybe we're just nerds after all.
Well, we are, but we also really like it when there's evidence that supports our hunches.
Well, I'd say they're more than hunches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we haven't had evidence.
That's great to hear.
This is
yeah.
our observations and our anecdotal evidence. Can I call it that?
Yeah, so thanks, Carol, for proving us right.
This is great. We love it.
So the Bayesian network model is really fascinating. And when we control one variable, we find that when we control the lack of job control and change it to the most optimum status. So if you can have 100% of job control, what would change your mental health? So we identify there would be 8% improvement in the mental health status. That's the prediction of the model. But if we control a combination of 4 or 5 psychosocial hazards, we can improve up to 77% if we control 4. If we control 5, we can improve 88% of the mental health status.
So are you saying that providing an EAP phone number may be less effective than controlling psychosocial hazards in improving work and mental health?
I don't know.
I guess in your research you didn't directly compare the efficacy of the or the impact size of the two. So the EAP, you can probably not make that assumption.
Let's not make jumps.
Yeah, but that's amazing. Like, that is a huge impact and improvement by focusing systemically right on the design of work rather than just giving people resilient skills or self-care skills. It shows that the employee can have a direct impact on the well-being of their employees by what they're asking people to do.
Yeah. So the four key variables I identified being lack of co-worker support, mm-hmm. lack of job control, role conflict, and job insecurity. So these four together, if we can improve them as a bundle, mm-hmm. then we can achieve the probability of 77% of good mental health.
Yeah.
That's the model prediction.
Yeah.
If we can improve also the poor physical environment as the fifth variable, mm-hmm. then it can improve the mental health status of the workers up to 83%.
It's interesting that that's the fifth one, right? And it's the big four you're saying, which will have the biggest impact. Because I was at a sustainability conference talking on a panel last week, and there was someone from the construction industry talking about how great their physical environment was, right? There's a lot more prefabrication happening in construction rather than it being done on site. And they're saying we can control the physical environment a lot better doing it that way. But that was their control. They weren't thinking about the other four psychosocial hazards, which is saying are the ones that we should focus on first.
Yeah, but you touch on a very important area. So construction industry is undergoing the fourth industrial revolution. We call it Building 4.0 or Construction 4.0. And that's the exciting time ahead. It is really the time to think about how we can do what we design, how we can build things in a different way that can actually better control the psychosocial hazards in such a new work environment.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. And obviously more companies are thinking about ESG and sustainability, and we just need them thinking not just about the environmental sustainability, but the sustainability of their people strategy as well.
Yeah, I wonder if that in sort of interacts with job insecurity as well, though, that the industry is going through this sort of revolution at the moment, and what that means for the people who are in those more traditional trade-based roles, and they're actually looking at how the industry is evolving and what does that actually mean for their job security into the future.
Yeah, so prefabrication, well, we think people would, well, when technology comes, there's always a need to upskill or retraining, but it doesn't mean that the number of jobs will be reduced. So just people would need to be more flexible and maybe do something different. And I think when building information modeling came out, there was a saying that, okay, quantity surveyor would be out of job because you don't need to do measurement. You've got the BIM model, which gives you the quantity. So there's no job for you. But no, quantity surveyor still there and still being strong in the industry. I think there's always, if technology is technology, but there's still, we need human to use it in the right way.
Yeah, and I think that there's probably an element in there as well as what is the role of the employer in actually taking your employees through that process of upskilling, as opposed to just saying, all right, well, we've got this technology and we're going to make this entire work group redundant and it's up to them to go and reskill themselves. So I think there's an ethical question in there around, yeah, how you manage that transition as an employer.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, and that would start from TAFE, I guess.
Yeah, but thinking about the people who are actually, you know, sort of mid-career as that change is happening, and how does the reskilling, you know, what is the role of the employer in actually facilitating and supporting them in that reskilling and potentially keeping them employed as they're going through that process, as well as the pipeline through TAFE.
Yeah.
So an interesting emerging issue, I guess.
Yeah, and the role of government, I guess, as well in that, because it can't just be borne by the construction companies because they have to operate, you know, at least profitable, or well, cost neutral at least, if not profitably.
So, Carol, what is next for your fascinating research?
So building on the mathematical model, we now identify, so these five are important psychosocial hazards that really has potential to influence people's mental health. And we are going to use agent-based modeling to do some simulation to see what are the effective interventions to mitigate or reduce these combination of psychosocial hazards. We're still testing and hope to share with you the outcome later.
Well, we'll be very interested in that outcome because the that's always the challenge is the evidence base around the solutions, and that's where the big gaps are at the moment. So it's excellent to hear that you're actually taking that step and looking at solutions and their efficacy.
Yeah, I dare say we're probably going to be reconnecting with you, Carol, quite regularly in the future, because I think we're trying to solve similar problems. So trying to understand that interrelation between psychosocial hazards and their ultimate impact on worker mental health, but then what are the controls that can be used to reduce risk and by how much?
I'm also interested to hear, like, what are your thoughts on how generalizable this research is outside of the construction industry, or do you think we need replication of this process in other industries to sort of look at whether those factors are common sort of globally or whether there are unique primary hazards in different industries?
And even can the model be applied in different industries to understand the main factors?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. That's a great question. And my
Which one was a great question, Carol?
Both. Yeah.
You just piggybacked on my question.
I don't know. I thought my question was better. And I think Carol's just like covering up now.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the PhD student working on this project, Yen, she's now working with Kirsten as a research assistant. And Kirsten got a big data set from Workplace Health and Safety Queensland. And she's going to build the Bayesian network model for different industries.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely be in touch about that, Carol.
Like, we will.
No, it's very interesting. Yeah. Hey, Carol, like, seriously, sometimes there's just topics which I think, yeah, they're okay. Yeah, I wonder where this goes. And then they just end up being amazing. And this has been one of those ones where I've really enjoyed myself and really enjoyed nerding out with you and Joelle. What if you think, obviously you're interested particularly in the construction industry given your background, you're obviously very interested in mental health outcomes as well, so looking into the future, what are your hopes for the future of workplace mental health in the construction industry?
I hope there can be higher mental health literacy, as that reflected from the interview, those who had mental health awareness training, they could articulate mental health in a better way. And I think it's not just about awareness, there need to be more training, and this is no longer a stigma. So I really hope in construction industry, we all can have a higher level of mental health literacy.
Yeah, we totally agree. And that's generally where we start. You know, there's a lot of companies, particularly now with the regs coming in, first of all, in New South Wales, you know, they're looking to do psychosocial risk assessment because it is a regulated activity. However, you need to build that literacy first. You know, what's this job demands that you're telling me to think about, or role ambiguity? You know, what the heck is this? So it's broader than just understanding mental health, mental illness. It's also understanding psychosocial factors, and that's throughout an organisation, not just at the you know, the functional team level or just at the employee level. Line managers need to be cognizant of this stuff as well. So yeah, definitely agree. That's a good place to start.
And do you have any words of advice for listeners who are wanting to work in the field of psychological health and safety?
Oh, go for it. This is exciting time ahead. With Industry 4.0 and with the digital transformation, construction industry moving to advanced manufacturing, automation, robotics, it really opens a new way to how things should be built, how the work environment should be structured. And I think there's lots of opportunity to better manage psychosocial hazards in the workplace, in construction industry.
Well, we certainly agree with that.
Yeah, and there's definitely a skills shortage in this space at the moment.
Yes,
so
big time.
If you want to upskill, great time to do it.
Yeah.
Carol, again, awesome having you on. Thank you so much for your time. We'll definitely be popping a link to your research paper in the show notes.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Great. Listeners, that brings us to the end of if you're a geek like me and Joelle, a very...
We really nerded out in this one.
Oh, big one, yeah. So, yeah, you would have enjoyed that episode if you're anything like Joelle and myself. So remember, if you prefer to watch these conversations rather than just listen to them, you can catch that on the Flourish DX YouTube channel. We also take some of the best clips, and there's some very poignant bits in this conversation today that we'll be putting on the LinkedIn channel for Flourish DX. While you're over on LinkedIn, again, Joelle and I are on there all the time, seeing great information being disseminated regularly from the likes of Carol. So check us out over there and make sure that you connect with us if you want to continue the conversation. But that's it, listeners. We'll catch you next episode.
You've been listening to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. To stay up to date with the latest on psychological injury prevention, follow Flourish DX on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast at www.psychhealthandsafety.com.